This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Yeah, a game that had a little of everything last night. If you're a Mariners fan, hopefully you enjoyed it. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. A lot of guests today. Excited to talk to Jason Churchill here in a half hour. We'll talk some baseball. And then at 8 o'clock, Shane Waldron will join me, Seahawks offensive coordinator. Looking forward to a little conversation with him about where this team is going offensively, et cetera. But if you're a Mariners fan, there was a little bit of something for everybody last night, right? Their luck turned a little bit. They come up with 11 hits, 10 of them were singles. Like more than half of them didn't leave the infield. It was just a really bizarre, interesting, weird game. And then the Phillies just kicked the ball all around. I mean, that's not a team that can play defense. That's sort of how they're made, right? I saw somebody say they were essentially an experiment in what it would be like if you had a team entirely made up of DHs, right? Like, oh, the DH is legal. Let's go with 9, right? And that's sort of where their team is at. And oh, by the way, their pitcher had a couple of errors in the game as well. So just kind of a big mess on the field. That's really what we were expecting with the Phillies, and closer to what we've been expecting from Robbie Ray, who was dominant for 4 innings, ran into some trouble in the 5th, and then couldn't get out of the 6th. So, a good experience for a Mariners fan. Here's my question. They score 5 runs, right? They do it with, is it fair to call it some luck? Right? I mean, anytime you have that many seeing eye singles and bloops and swinging bunts, et cetera, there's a lot of luck that, that's the sort of law of averages, right?
Once in a while, yeah.
The baseball gods were shining on the Mariners. It doesn't take away from the victory, but let's call it what it was, right? There was a lot of luck to their offensive explosion, so to speak. They didn't have more than 1 extra base hit in the game. They scored 5 runs. Do you feel better about that, or would you feel better if they came out and hit like 4 home runs, 3 doubles, right? 12 hits, scored 5 runs the same way? Like, essentially, the question is, do you think the Mariners aren't winning because they need to start hitting it harder, or because the world is just against them? Like, they just need their luck to turn, or they need to start hitting better.
Well, it takes games like that to get your luck to turn sometimes.
Okay.
Right? You get get more guys on base, you get more guys hitting with runners in scoring position, you can go station to station, you're like, oh yeah, we can do this.
I mean,
game gets easier.
You could make an argument that they really, didn't take enough advantage last night. They had the bases loaded, they had men on base, they scored a few runs, but even the RBIs they had, as we said, were mostly on, bloops and dribblers and that kind of stuff. There was only really 1 hard hit ball for an RBI.
I mean,
Aaron Nola.
Aaron Nola's no slouch either.
No, he's good. He's one of those pitchers, by the way. I was watching Nola last night. I'm glad he's not on my team. Like, he's a good pitcher, and he's put up really good numbers. I know he's like a Cy Young Award candidate at times, but I don't know. Watching him pitch, like, he doesn't miss a lot of bats. It's sort of like a lot of, like, I don't know, backdoor two-seamer. I do not personally enjoy watching him as much as plenty of other pitchers out there who I really enjoy. And when he's on, I would put Robbie Ray in that category. I mean, a Robbie Ray like he was for the first 4 innings, where he's, strutting around and he's grunting on every pitch and he's the tight pants and he's making you, he's embarrassing hitters at times.
Yeah, a lot of swings and misses.
That to me is like, that's some real dominance. And yet you kind of watch that game, and because of all the pitches that it took him to get there, Ray kind of ran out of gas a little bit in the 5th. Didn't look like the same pitcher still into the 6th inning. And while he didn't pitch, the numbers weren't there for Nola, he was, able to go just as long in the game despite giving up all of those base runners because of the way he conserved his pitches a little bit. So, I don't know. Robbie Wright, I was really happy to see those 4 innings of dominance. The fastball ticked up a little bit. He threw it harder. 10 strikeouts and 5 2/3. That's getting back towards the types of numbers that we expect out of Robbie Ray, right? We went through this yesterday and saying, all right, over the course of his career, he's nearly an 11 strikeout per game pitcher. And this year, the strikeouts were at 7.5, right? That's way down from what you expected and what you essentially paid for when you brought him in here. So why is that? How concerning is it? Well, I know that yesterday wasn't a perfect outing. And as I said, that was not still, to me, the real Robbie Ray. It was good. The real Robbie Ray does that and still makes it into the, you know, pitches into the seventh. That, to me, is what I'm looking for. That technically last night isn't even a quality start, right? He doesn't make it into the sixth. He gives up two runs, or he makes it into the, he doesn't finish six and gives up two runs.
Yeah.
That's not a quality start. So, you know, it's a really good outing. It's not quite yet what I expect out of Robbie Ray. But the best news there is that it shows you the path to what it can look like. Touched 95 when he needed to blow a fastball by you. The slider was working to guys on both sides of the plate. He was able to throw it for strikes. He was able to throw it for swings and misses. Like, I of all of the little concerns that we've had with the Mariners this year, I'm probably alone on an island, but the one that I've been most concerned about is Robbie Ray, because I've been waiting to see the dominant strikeout pitcher, and not just the guy who won the Cy Young Award last year, but the dominant strikeout pitcher he's been now for the last few years. We weren't getting that. So I was pretty relieved to see that, even though I'm not like, I didn't think it was all the way back.
I was relieved to see JP come in and hit a couple really hard hit balls too. With the RBI, I think he hit to center field.
Yeah,
100
he
plus.
That.
I mean, those are the little things that I like to see after a week of really bad baseball.
Yeah, and hopefully this is the thing that kind of turns it
around.
And
you need
gets
one of those.
Going.
You need a couple seeing eye singles. You need an infield hit.
They needed 12 of them, honestly.
Bunt, you know?
They needed all of them. Maybe not all of them in one night, but hey, you know, the way it turns out, Sewald gives up a home run late. Mm-hmm. You needed every one of those runs just because that Phillies lineup is going to score runs. Right, 12:40 game today. Prepare for it. Right, I mean, it may still be going on when you get home from work because they take pitches, they score runs, and they play some of the worst defense I've ever seen.
I'm just happy nobody was on base for Bryce Harper.
It's like watching beer league softball once everyone's like six deep. You're like, dude, I don't think that's the route you want to take to that fly. Oh yeah, no, I wouldn't throw that. Yeah, no. Oh, you gotta.
And everyone swings out of their shoes.
Sheesh, honestly, like beer league softball. So. I once played beer league softball. My dad and I played with this great team, man. It was a blast. There were some interesting characters. And one of the guys I watched go into his van during the beginning of the game, come out around the fifth and be like, I'm ready to play.
Oh, what kind of van was it? Like a minivan or like an Econoline?
No, not like an Econoline.
Yeah.
Like a big van. he came
van,
out.
I
would say, like, I think he drank 15 beers during the time he was in there.
Went to his van / apartment.
24 beers in a case, right? I think he had a case. I don't think it was an 18-pack. I think it was a case. Maybe it was an 18. He drank somewhere between 9 and 15 beers in 5 innings. And I was like, I'm in left field. You're like, okay, Francis, wherever you want to be, bro, brother. It's all you. You're
some
out
of the most
there.
Fun I've ever had on a baseball field is in rec league softball like that.
Dude, my dad and I played together. I almost got into a fight backing my dad up one night. It was great. I had to, like, come charging in from the outfield because I thought this guy was going to swing on my dad.
See, that's
was
not fun.
Oh, no, it was pretty fun. That was pretty fun.
Oh, I hate when they get in fights like that. It's like I'm here to, like, blow off some steam, not to relive some glory days and fight someone.
Oh.
Is that what you wanted to do?
I mean, I was like 25. I was still in my glory days.
Okay.
Playing softball.
Fair. Ready to fight some old guys? You get that old man strength?
No, I was just willing to help out my dad. Wouldn't you back up your dad if somebody wanted to fight your dad?
Absolutely.
And don't you think that'd be kind of a thrilling moment of like, I have an opportunity to back up my dad?
That part, yes.
Yeah, that's all I'm talking about.
The humbling old man strength that's about to be dished upon
Thankfully,
you is different.
Cooler heads prevailed, so it worked out just fine. But yeah, I mean, the idea of running in from the outfield, my dad played second and I was in center. Sprinting in like, all right, let's go.
Run through a brick wall. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll come back, tell you everything you need to know, including how Justin screwed up needs to know. It's all next on the Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports. Maybe it was my fault, too, on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Mariners deciding to pay homage last night to a Hall of Famer, to a legend. In fact, Wee Willie Keeler, who once said, keep your eye on the ball and hit him where they ain't. Well, that's exactly what they did. A lethal combination of bloops and swinging bunts and seeing eye singles and essentially just sitting around waiting for the Phillies to just kick the ball around. It wasn't pretty, but it did work. Finished with 11 hits, only one of them for extra bases. Four different errors made by a Phillies team that really struggles to play defense. It leads to five runs, and it gave Robbie Ray enough of a cushion.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss and a slider for strike three. 12 in a row set down by Robbie Ray, and that is strikeout number 7. Holy smokes, what a performance.
Yeah, 10 strikeouts, 5 2/3 innings, got himself into a little bit of trouble in the fifth. Otherwise, he really was dazzling at times against a very good lineup and a great sign of what's to come, hopefully, for Robbie Ray. Mariners win 5-4. Scott Servais happy.
Nice win. We had one of those games where the ball did go or did bounce our way tonight. Didn't hit a ton of balls hard off of Nola, but we were fortunate. We hit him in the right spot. We haven't had that game in quite some time. And you always say, oh, it's going to even out. I don't know if it ever evens out, but we'll take it.
It came pretty close last night. They almost got all of their luck back in one night. Little day baseball today. Logan Gilbert will be on the hill. 12:40 first pitch from T-Mobile. And in case you want more information on Wee Willie Keeler, he was pretty good at taking his own advice. He hit .341 in his career. He had a grand total of 33 home runs in 19 seasons. 33 home runs in 19 seasons. So he would have been very proud of what the Mariners did last night. Now, one other piece of news, not exactly good news, though. Ryan Divish on with Jake and Stacy yesterday with kind of an unofficial update on Mitch Haniger. Warning, you may not want to hear this.
You know, Mitch Haniger, it's possible that he's out 12 weeks total. When I talked to him, it was framed bad enough that it's bone bruised on the side, on the high level. You just don't get back from that. And we've seen how much torque that Mitch puts on his body when he swings and how hard he goes. I just don't know how long that's going to take to get him back. You know, he's still in a walking boot. Typical for a grade two, between a grade two and a grade three sprain is 12 weeks. And to play at maximum levels, that could be that long. 12 weeks without Mitch Haniger is a long time.
It sure is. Now, we'll wait and see what happens and whether or not Kyle Lewis is able to make his return a whole lot sooner than that. Maybe that's a week or two away from happening. If that's the case, maybe that provides some of the pop. But again, one of the things this lineup is missing is just veteran leadership. I don't mean leadership off the field. I mean veteran at bats on the field. And Haniger certainly provides them.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, so warning. When I wrote this need to know, I thought it was true, but it turns out not to be. So the schedule isn't going to be released today in the NFL. It's tomorrow. Now, normally, this is a story that I don't care about at all. You know how the Groz always complains about the draft and about training camp and says, oh, I don't want to talk about it. That's kind of how I generally am with the schedule. Like, not who you're going to play, but when you're going to play them. It's always like, all right, well, you'll play whoever's on the schedule. Like, what are you going to do? When's the bye? Okay, and that's about the end of the story for me. But this year it's a little bit different, and maybe that's why I'm jumping the gun by a day, because the schedule is not actually coming out until tomorrow, and maybe it has something to do with the email that Justin sent last night that I read as saying that it was coming out today.
Maybe a little bit my fault, too.
We'll share responsibility. How's that? In any event, I think there's a few things we know. We know they're playing the Broncos and Russell Wilson. They're coming to town. We just don't know when. Could it be opening week on Monday night? That'd be pretty fun. A different primetime matchup. You got to imagine everyone interested in that dynamic. We know Bobby will be returning at some point with the Rams. We know they'll play the Bucs in Munich in November and that their bye week will almost definitely come right after that. So that's the week before Thanksgiving. So that would put them in play potentially for a Thanksgiving Day game because of that. We haven't seen that in a while. And there's also 3 Christmas Day games this year. That's new. So could the Seahawks be one of those teams? So a couple of interesting dynamics. And then finally, we know there's going to be a lot of travel. They are going to travel 29,446 miles to be exact. Obviously, that's the most in the league compared to the Steelers, who will travel fewer than 6,500 miles and never once leave the Eastern time zone in the regular season. So, yeah, a lot of travel ahead of the Seahawks. And just as a little warning, I'm going to read that verbatim tomorrow morning in Need to Know.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, kind of a weird quirk of the NHL lottery. It's not even really bad luck, but despite finishing with the third worst record, the Kraken's best odds were of landing the number 4 pick in the draft. And that's exactly where they ended up. Number 4. Montreal had the best luck. They will draft first. Devils are 2. Arizona 3rd. Kraken end up 4th. So there's not really believed to be like a generational type talent available in this draft. There's a couple players that likely stand above the rest, and obviously they would be unlikely to be available at number 4. But there should be some pretty good, high-quality players available in the 4th spot, Ron Francis says.
Yeah, no, we feel pretty comfortable that we can get guys in the probably top 5, 6 that could step into the next couple of years. So you know, we feel there's a couple players that step into this year's lineup probably in the NHL. Whether they get to us at four and we're able to pick them or not remains to be seen. But there are talented players in this draft.
Yeah, so he's basically saying it's five or six deep, but really only two deep in terms of guys who could, like Beniers, step in almost right away. So it's not perfect, but it could be a lot worse. If you're wondering, there is believed to be a great generational player available next year. So we'll see. If the Kraken have another year where they struggle, the number one pick next year may have a little bit more value. NHL playoffs last night, Hurricanes, Blues, Leafs, Kings all win. They all lead 3-2. And then a couple of blowouts in the NBA. Miami with the big one. They beat Philly by 35. And then Phoenix just barely squeaking by Dallas. They only win by 30. It's everything you need to know. Do it every hour, quarter past the hour.
Don't love that Haniger news.
No.
Not happy to hear that.
I don't like that. Nope, not at all.
Either of you guys ever had a bone bruise?
I don't think so.
It sounds not fun.
I don't really understand exactly what it is, right? Like, how does it differ from a regular? Because a regular bruise, what, a skin bruise? I don't really bruise. I never get bruises. Do you get bruises?
I mean, I crashed a lot, so I got hurt a
lot. Oh, yeah. I bruise easy, but that's because you're trying not to eat so much red meat. I don't eat enough of it.
Oh, is that
when you don't have enough
thing?
Iron? Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why my wife always Heather will bang her shoulder on something, and the next thing you know, she's got like a giant blue circle on her arm.
You
or
bruise
something.
Easily when you're deficient in iron.
Well, maybe I'm proficient in iron because I don't bruise at all. Like I'll whack something like no ish, nothing.
It's all that red
never.
Meat.
It's all that Pop Tarts.
It's all that Pop Tart banana flavor running through my system.
I looked it up. A bone bruise. It says it's less severe than a bone fracture.
Okay.
Causes blood and fluid to build up in and around your injured bone.
I don't want any part of that.
No.
Yeah, it was crazy the way that happened, man. That just his ankle just like went on him while he was swinging the bat. And you know, look, I'm no doctor. You got to wonder if it had anything to do with him coming back, right? He had just had COVID for a while. I don't know whether he was, you know, the body wasn't fully back or not. I mean, just I've never seen anything happen quite like that where he swung and his rear foot just went on him.
That guy keeps himself in such good shape.
I know. Yeah, so maybe just being off for a week like that and then trying to get back in. I mean, who knows? I'm speculating. I have no idea. I'm not a doctor and certainly not his doctor. But we can ask Jason Churchill some of these questions, and specifically what I want to know from him. With some of the Mariners who have been struggling and not playing up to potential, which guys are in trouble and which guys should we reasonably expect to turn it around like quick? We'll talk to Jason Churchill about those things and more next. Mike Salk Show and Seattle Sports on 710.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, Mariners get back into the win column again last night. As we said, kind of a weird, funky, strange, somewhat lucky game. But they come away with a win 5-4. Let's talk some baseball with Jason Churchill, our friend from Prospect Insider. Good morning, Jason. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. I want to ask you about a whole bunch of different guys and get your opinion from sort of the scouting and observational standpoint. I guess we'll start with Robbie Ray because we've been talking a lot about him this morning. What have you made of Robbie in general, even up to maybe last night? Has he been what you've expected?
No, and I actually wrote about that last night. It's been kind of strange to watch. You know, while it would have been understandable for Robbie Ray to have a season this year, that wasn't quite as good as he was a year ago because he's never been that good before. We've seen the stuff, and he just kind of put everything together last year. So coming into this season, I was like, maybe there are a few more bumps in the road, so to speak. But I did not expect this, until last night. We hadn't seen the Robbie Ray the Mariners signed. It's kind of the way that I've been approaching this. And some of it's velocity, but most of it is, the command hasn't been there and the slider hasn't been as good. And we did see that last night, though.
Yeah, and obviously the result of that has been that the strikeouts haven't been there, right? I mean, he's like an 11 or 12 strikeout a game guy who is striking out 7.5 a game. I mean, that's a huge difference. Did you see enough last night? I know he didn't make it past the sixth and kind of got himself into trouble once again for one inning in the fifth. Was that enough to kind of convince you that he's back on track and that that's still in there?
I'm not quite there yet, but that was a big step in that direction. I think if we see another start like that or even one, a little bit further where he gets into the seventh and again another 9, 10, 11 strikeout performance like that with, one or two walks or fewer, certainly. That's kind of what you're looking for in your number one starter, and that's what we saw from Robbie Ray a lot last year. He was really good with the slider last night. I think that was the big thing for me. Among all these conversations we're having about the velocity, his biggest issue has been being able to locate the fastball and then execute the better versions of his slider. He just really hasn't had those two things in combination. And he had them, you know, last night. And we're seeing the velocity slowly come back. I mean, we saw a lot of 91, 92s the first four starts of the year. And the last three, four starts, we're seeing more 93, more 94. I think he averaged almost 93.5 last night. He was 93 last time out. And the time before that, he was his best day velocity-wise. So I think he's getting there. But that slider last night, you know, 30 swings, 15 swings and misses. That is the Robbie Ray the Mariners signed. And, yeah, he didn't get super deep, but he had that really rough fifth inning where I think he threw 31 pitches and only 18 strikes. I mean, the efficiency went down, but it was certainly a pretty significant step in the right direction.
You know, one thing I notice, and this is what my eyes tell me, maybe you'll have a better sense of it or maybe even have numbers to back it up, and maybe I'm totally wrong, but it sure seems like in the last year or two, we're seeing more sliders to, like, righties throwing sliders to lefties and lefties throwing sliders to righties than I can ever remember. Like, it used to feel as if they never went back foot like that, and now I feel like you're seeing it a lot more often.
Yeah, you used to actually hear the term back foot slider more because it wasn't as popular of an option, but these days you're better off throwing a slider to the opposite handed hitter and just trying to place it right. And, you know, you're not throwing sliders for called strikes all that often. It is a chase pitch. That's why the fastball location is so big. You know, no matter what, lefty, righty, you're better off throwing that slider to the opposite hand hitter than you are another fastball. You want to stay away from your fastball for the most part. I mean, depending on who you are, obviously Logan Gilbert's a little bit different. You want to throw the fastball a little bit more, but, you know, three quarters of the starting pitchers out there,
yeah,
want to throw that off-speed pitch, their best off-speed pitch, even to opposite-handed hitters.
So is that what it is?
The slider is the more popular. Yeah.
Because rather than develop another pitch, right? Like, rather than, in Robbie Ray's case, developing a changeup or something to throw to righties, they're better off throwing something that breaks at a player if it's their best pitch.
It is. It is. Huh. And you're seeing a lot of pitchers, you know, we talk about the whole two pitch thing. Like generally pitchers need three, maybe even four pitches sometimes, depending on how good their first two pitches are. Well, Robbie Ray's first two pitches, especially when you go back to last season, a fastball is an elite pitch. The slider is an elite pitch, so he's not throwing really a whole lot of his other two pitches. He has a curveball in his chamber. He's got the changeup, and he's not throwing the curveball hardly at all anymore. And the changeup's like two, three, four, five times a game. I think threw four of them last night. You're just better off, instead of throwing a 40-grade changeup, throwing your 60 or 70 grade slider and just doing different things with it, you know, backfooting it, trying to backdoor it, but you're not throwing it in the zone, at least on purpose anyway, all that often. You're trying to get hitters to chase. And there have been recent studies where, you know, hitters, you know, that suggest hitters should swing less because pitchers aren't throwing balls in the zone anyway.
Oh, great. So that'll be awesome for baseball. Great. Please,
right?
Swing less.
Swung less.
Ugh.
Right.
Jason, stop.
Yeah, so
stop talking, please. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let me change subject and talk about something else that won't make me mad, because I'm in a good mood. It was great. It was nice to see the Mariners win, everything else last night. As you look at some of the struggling guys so far this year, who concerns you and who do you think will be just fine? They're just kind of going through it right now.
Yeah, the only two, I don't like to use the word worry or concern anymore, but the only two that I think are problems are Jared Kelnick and Cal Raleigh. I don't think Cal Raleigh has a chance at the plate right now. And I think the Mariners agree, and that's why they sent him down, and he's only up because Tom Murphy is hurt, and they really don't have any other options at this point. Although, I think there's a non-zero chance that at some point they swap out, you know, a Brian O'Keefe for Cal Raleigh just to have, you know, for Cal Raleigh's sake as well, perhaps. Have somebody up here who might have a little bit better chance to put the ball in play on a consistent basis, even though the upside's not there, and let Cal work on things.
Shouldn't there be veteran backup catcher kicking around somewhere that you can go trade for?
Yeah, you know, this is a conversation I've been having for a couple of weeks. Maybe, but you're going to probably at this point in the season, like, grossly overpay for that guy. Mm-hmm. It is so difficult to find those guys at that position. You know, if you needed a third baseman like that, not really a problem. A left fielder, not really a problem. A first baseman, not really a problem. You get to a premium position, second base, shortstop, center field, problem. And especially at catcher, you know, what do you want to pay for that guy? And you may not only need him for like 2 months anyway, depending on when Tom Murphy's going to be back. So you have to be somewhat careful about the cost, you know, of acquiring someone like that. But you imagine the answer to that question, Mike, is yes, somewhere along the way, there probably is someone you could go get. Mm. And I just wonder if the Mariners shouldn't go do that anyway, despite the fact that Murphy's going to be back. Luis Torrens is another one of those bats that you're talking about. We have a decent track record, you know, relatively speaking, of after he came back from AAA last year, he was really, really good. Well, he hasn't been good again early this year, and while it's only been like 50-something plate appearances after last night, you know, if he doesn't hit, what do you do? You can't continue to run out two catchers that give you absolutely nothing because you already have one, maybe two other spots in your order that aren't giving you anything. So they have some things to consider. Jerry DePoto's got a tough decision to make here, and the Mitch Haniger, you know, thing being out until July, maybe even a little later, that's just exacerbating the issue with some of these other spots in the order. Not really that worried about Luis Torrens, relatively speaking, certainly more Kelnick and Raleigh. And I think Abraham Toro is doing like pretty much everything right, except his timing is a little off. And he's popping balls up instead of driving. You see some of his fly balls that are lazy fly balls that are 98 miles an hour, 103 miles an hour. There's just a little adjustment that he has to make. So I'm not all that concerned about what Abraham Toro is doing right now, but Cal Raleigh, they're leaning on him. Jared Kelnick, at least right now, they're leaning on him.
Yeah, tell me more about Kelnick.
Those guys are probably, I mean, Jared Kelnick is in a situation where there's probably a mechanical fix to make, and there's been a lot of tweaking, you know, over the course of his very short big league career. But I think it's mostly about timing and being able to cover, you know, certain parts of the zone. If pitchers don't throw Kelnick a pitch in a certain one or two areas of the strike zone, he's not getting a hit, Mike. Like, that's what we're looking at. And if you want somebody, a young hitter, that is the polar opposite of that, it is Julio Rodriguez. And that is a big reason why Rodriguez is performing right now and Kelnick is not. You can throw Julio Rodriguez 95 on the inner edge, and somehow, some way, he can get the fat part of the bat on the baseball and hit the ball the other way or hit the ball up the middle, whether it be a ground ball or a line drive or a fly ball in the gap, 95, 100, 105 miles an hour. Jared Kelnick cannot do that right now. It is plate coverage. It is zone coverage. And he's got a wheelhouse just like anyone else. You saw that home run, you know, over the weekend. But if you stay out of that area, you're getting Jared Kelnick out because he'll just get himself out. That's where he is right now. So it's more than just basic mechanical adjustments. He's also got, you know, hey, I'm going to chase this ball up in the zone problem. Although he hasn't done that a whole lot the last four or five games, but there are still far too many areas of the strike zone and far too many pitches that he cannot get the barrel to on any sort of a consistent basis.
So, Haniger, let's say this is true and he's not going to be back until July. Kyle Lewis may be ready to go in another week or two. You know, do you send Kelnick down and allow him to try to figure that stuff out at AAA?
Yeah, I would. I at this point, you know, and I was at the game last night, and it was, and I had a buddy in the stands, and we're just going back and forth, and it's like every time Kelnick comes to the plate and something like that happens, and it's like he doesn't have a chance. Yeah. Like, they're going to bust him in, they're going to throw soft stuff away, and then all of a sudden he's thinking, hey, I got a 2-0 count, I got a 3-0 count here. You know, you're wondering, are they going to greenlight him? Because sometimes it just takes that one fastball to get a guy where he needs to be, and then they'll groove a fastball and he fouls it off. Like, it's just unbelievable how just, like, everything is headed in the wrong direction with Jared Kelnick right now. Like, the timing is off. The mechanics probably aren't quite right at this point, so it's a tweak here and a tweak there. And he just can't get the stuff. Anything 95 plus, he's having problems with. Anything that breaks, he's having problems with. And his timing is up. I don't think he trusts his hands. We've heard that term over the years in Major League Baseball. I don't think he trusts that he's going to be able to get to good velocity. So I do think there's also also some cheating going on and him trying to get to that. So there are a lot of things going on. It just really depends on the at-bat. We could literally sit here, Mike, for like an hour and not talk about everything that's happening in Jared Kelnick's at-bats that you really don't want to see happening with any hitter, let alone
All right. You're depressing. You know, we're trying to be positive today, dude. Sheesh.
Hey, let's talk about who
we have 2 minutes left before Brock. We have 2 minutes left before Brock. Choose any player on this roster to say something good about.
Hey, Adam Frazier. Love Adam Frazier. I mean, there's a lot of good things to talk about. Adam Frazier's starting to swing the bat again.
Yep.
Julio Rodriguez is probably the funnest conversation you can have about the Mariners right now. There's no reason to think that the fact that he's been the sixth best player in the American League over the last almost 3 weeks now is a fluke. No reason to believe that it's a fluke, none whatsoever. Julio Rodriguez is playing like a star in Major League Baseball at 21 years old.
Give me 1 minute on George Kirby versus Matt Brash. No, just Kirby. Forget it. I don't want to hear your negativity anymore. Give me 1 minute on George Kirby.
That was an extremely impressive performance on Sunday. I did not expect to see that. I think the one thing that surprised me, Mike, was we knew he had the velocity with the fastball. There was more movement and maybe a little bit more deception in that delivery than we've seen, you know, in the minors that I could see watching him on television in the minors. And that could go a long way. This really could be another Logan Gilbert situation where you get a lot of fastball value out of someone. And it will give George Kirby time to develop those secondary pitches. The slider's decent, but he doesn't locate it all the time. And the curveball and the changeup still need work, although it looks like he's going to be a legitimate four-pitch kind of Adam Wainwright guy with plus velocity. So George Kirby, like, whoo, that was impressive.
Yeah,
on
he's got a little bit of Mark Pryor to him and how easy the delivery is and how the ball just explodes. And then you're right, Wainwright's a good comp. Roy Halladay's another one.
Justin Verlander for the velocity and the delivery. I see Justin Verlander in that delivery every single time he releases.
How about 98 with as much arm side run as he got the other day? It's pretty ridiculous. So I got to run
that cutter slider that moves the other way.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Jason. Let's do this again sooner rather than later, and we'll do it next time. Coming off like a 5-game win streak or something like that, so you can just go crazy bragging on some of these guys. Make sure you follow Jason at Prospect Insider, and he does a great job, great insight on the game. Thanks, man. We'll talk soon.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. There's Jason Churchill, truly one of my favorites. He joins me there in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. I do love talking baseball with him, and I am very concerned about everything he just said about Jared Kelnick. So let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Mikey. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's Mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom.
Oh, happy birthday.
Jane, big birthday for her.
How is
it? It's not
Jane.
Actually particularly big. It's just a birthday. She's doing great. Yeah.
Doing good?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. She opened our cards last night, though, which I thought was odd. She's like, oh, thanks for the card. I'm like, your birthday's tomorrow. She's like, I know, but I really wanted to open the card. Like, what are you, 7? What are you talking about? You open the card ahead of time? You wait until your birthday.
Oh. You like Church, huh? Jason Churchill?
Oh, yes.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, and he did, and he's got some pretty good insights on this team. I mean, you know, I think he like me, has been a little concerned about Robbie Ray, and really good to see last night, even though the long-term results in terms of how deep into the game he went weren't there. Just, you know, 10 strikeouts and 5 2/3 is a huge difference.
Yes, yes. Swings and misses. Being able to strike people out, not having to put everything in play. And, yep, and obviously with all those strikeouts, pitch count kind of got up there, so he didn't get as extended as maybe you wanted. But, ooh, they needed that one. And they need it today. They need to go finish and win this series and because this road trip is no joke.
And then after that, they have another one. Do you realize they have 3 straight East Coast road trips?
Whew.
Right? Yikes. They did the one from Tampa, Miami, and Houston. Come home for 2 series. Then they're going to go back on the road. I think they go, it's either New York, or New York, Toronto.
New York, Toronto.
And then Boston.
Yep.
Right? And then they come home. And then they go back to like Baltimore and somewhere. Like, it's crazy. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Well, there was a year the Seahawks had that, I believe, had a bunch of East Coast trips. You remember that? And I think the schedule comes out tomorrow.
Yes,
correct?
It is tomorrow. And the Seahawks are going to travel like 34,000 miles.
More than anybody else. Yes.
Well, they're going to Munich. That's part of it.
Yeah, that plays a little role.
Hey, so I got a question for you.
I didn't get Tom Brady's deal.
I was going to say, wasn't did you get the deal. I was just curious if you'd talk to your new teammate.
Right. Yeah, going to be a fun little orientation and hazing, rookie hazing for him when he joins next year.
So
that is.
When that happens and Tom Brady, you know, the story comes out that he's signing for like $30 million a year, whatever it is.
Right.
What are there? Is there like a text thread amongst the other color commentators at Fox?
Yeah.
Like, do you and Joel Klatt and Troy, does everybody get on a little text thread? Like, really?
Well, what does that
say?
They
got 30 million?
What does that say to Troy in particular, right? Because Troy wanted to make more than Tony Romo. And they were like, no, you're not going to make, we'll take care of you, but it's ridiculous.
Says do a little homework before the games instead of winging it.
And then all of a sudden, we're going to pay him double. We'll pay him double Tony Romo. So they actually had the money to pay Troy Aikman if they wanted to. But it was more of, I think, just Troy being difficult. And after all of these years and all the relationship and everything else that Fox had with Troy that took care of him, treated him incredibly well, like this is a fair and reasonable number.
But does anyone know whether or not Brady's even good at this?
Well, they thought Joe Montana was going to be really good.
Right. And he was terrible, right?
And they thought Bill Walsh was going to be really good. And then that Jason, I don't know if they thought Jason Witten would be really good.
They gave him the Monday night job.
Sure did.
Like, don't you have to at least, before you commit. Did. So what if he bombs? What if he's terrible? What if it's a Jason Witten situation and after a year they're like, we just can't even work with this. Right. They're going to pay out the rest of a $370 million deal?
Doesn't make sense.
There's got to be an out.
We've got, yes. I think we learned that in Geno Smith's contract. We always got to be careful about what these original numbers are, right?
Good point.
The great John Clayton always taught us that. Just be very, very guarded about whatever you read first. The devil is going to be in the details. What if Tom Brady, after a year, is like, you know what?
Yeah, I'm good.
There's a reason Peyton doesn't do it, okay? Because Peyton wants his weekends. Peyton wants to ski. Peyton's son plays baseball and basketball, and his daughter plays tennis and basketball and soccer. And, you know, he's a super active dad and wants to be around for their activities on top of all the other stuff that he does, both business and media. I can't do 20 straight weekends.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
It's a lot of work.
Or Thursdays or Monday. I mean, come on, Sundays and Thanksgiving and every holiday now. Like, and Tom's got kids. I thought that was part of why he retired, like, you know, for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, for six weeks or 40 days.
And then he was around the kids.
That's right.
We're all
and
good.
He's like, yeah, I'll go back to work.
Not only will I go back to work, I'm going to commit to 10 years at Fox as soon as I'm done.
Correct.
The whole thing is kind of bizarre.
Remarkable.
Hey, so I'm talking to Shane Waldron coming up here in about 10 minutes.
What?
Yeah, talking to my guy.
Say what?
That's right. Talking to Shane Waldron coming up in 10 minutes. What, you know, I've asked you a lot of questions about what this offense should look like this year, but I'll ask you again, you know, kind of how do you see it looking different, not just from the way it used to, but maybe with a different type of quarterback, not having, you know, a running quarterback? How do you see the offense looking different?
I see, honestly, like a Jared Goff Rams-led offense, and people are like, oh, well, Jared Goff took them to the Super Bowl with his skill set. They went to the Super Bowl, and I believe Shane was on that staff, correct? Obviously, New England had their way with them and everything else, and the Rams decided there was a ceiling to Jared Goff, and we got to go spend and trade and do what we got to do to get Matthew Stafford, and they win a Super Bowl. So that, quite honestly, is more of what I envision is, and I had the Rams that year, I think three times, the one season, and I didn't get paid $37 million. And I didn't even get paid $3 million. I didn't even get paid. Well, I'll keep moving that decimal on down the line. But anyway, I had the Rams like three times, and I just vividly remember talking to Sean McVay about this. Like, man, you make it easier on that O-line. Like, there's an illusion of complexity. It looks like you guys are doing so much and jet sweeps and formations and all this stuff, but you have really core principles.
Whoa.
Excuse me.
All right. That's why you don't get the 30 mil right there.
Whoa, whoa. That's why.
Brady won't have that problem. Brady's going to have
no.
Never have
Holy
phlegm.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, he's
no,
phlegm
ever,
free.
Ever.
Yeah.
So you have these core principles, and you do make it easy on the line because it's outside run and screen and play action and movement off of it. And it is. It's that illusion. That's what I would ask him. Is illusion of complexity still a real thing? Is that still something that's a
illusion
part of,
this? Of complexity?
Yep. So all it looks super complex to fans.
Justin, write that down. More, write that down. We have to ask Shane about the illusion of complexity.
Is that real? What is life like with two rookie offensive tackles? I mean, how much does that change your game? But most importantly, this is what I really want to hear. What is it like to actually have an off season?
Yeah. Wait, hold. Did you just like take over my interview?
You just took over the
interview. I asked you how the offense would look different.
Do you want me to keep
and now
going?
You're just asking questions of Shane Waldron.
I can keep going. Well, can I stick around for it?
No, absolutely not.
What?
What do you mean? Can you stick around for it? I wake up at 4 a.m. My privilege for that is that I get to talk to Shane Waldron here in a few minutes.
Brock, I'll allow it if you want to stay for it.
Get out of here. Just like Tom Brady, you're going to have to put in the work if you want to come talk to Shane Waldron.
Fine. All right, is that next?
What? Yes, it's next. What? Which is why I got
to
go.
So you go Churchill to meet a Waldron?
Yeah.
And you call that work?
And Brock, you know who else is coming on today?
No.
Paul Silvey.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's right. New home of the Seahawks over there, King
it's
5.
Pretty cool. And the schedule tomorrow comes out. Yeah. And we got a lot to talk about leading up to that. And, you know who else you get to talk to today?
You.
Me.
And Howdy.
Uh-huh.
I know. Yeah, we'll do the podcast right after the show. All right. See you, buddy. Thank you.
See ya.
All right, there's Brock Heward. Shane Waldron will join me next, as Brock so ably teased. It's coming up. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710.